You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, expertise and knowledge of business leaders, large and small, all across Oxfordshire with you, the listener. And today's going to be no different. On today's show, we are going to be talking about how business owners can plan for retirement and exit. And to do that, we're joined by three experts. We're joined by Stephanie Richards of St James's Place. We're joined by Zach Doger of ETSC. And we're joined by Sally Addis of Gartner Leader. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I welcome our three guests after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I hope you enjoyed that song. So let's start by introducing our three guests. So let's start. Stephanie, would you like to go first?
Thanks, Ben. Yes, Stephanie Richards. I've got my own business locally in just outside of Wantage in East Hendred. I've been in the finance industry for sadly over 20 years. I pride myself on giving financial advice to all. It's really important to me that I can reach out to families, individuals and businesses to help them with their financial advice. I think it's really important to plan for the future, and I'm not one of these financial advisors that disappears. We do reviews every single year because guess what? Life changes. So it's really important that I have a productive and interactive relationship with all my clients. So that's me.
Amazing. Next up, Zach, tell us all about you and your business.
Yes, of course. Thank you. And hello, everybody. My name's Zach and I'm a business broker. I've basically been selling businesses, SMEs, for over 25 years now. It's apt that we should have this conversation, because one of the great difficulties I've had in my time is that business owners have come along when they actually want to sell their business, whether it's ready to sell or not. So they haven't really given much time to an end game. They haven't got an exit strategy. So I'm really looking forward to having a conversation. And as part of my practice, we've built in various ways that we can reach out and have conversations with business owners, so that really 3 to 5 years before they decide to sell, we've educated them and we've got the business and themselves ready to sell.
Amazing. And last but definitely, Sally.
Hi, everyone. My name's Sally Addis. I'm a partner in the corporate and commercial department of Gardner Leader, which is a leading regional law firm. We have 7 offices in the Thames Valley, including London and Oxford. I'm the head of the Oxford office. I joined Gardner Leader a year ago and joined my team of 5 lawyers to Gardner Leader. So we formed the Oxford office. But I've been working in Oxford for 15 years because I previously had my own law firm, which was called Addis Law. And that was a niche corporate practice. So I've always done M&A, buying and selling businesses. I've been doing that for about 30 years. But just recently with Gardner Leader. I'm now part of a bigger team. There are 20 corporate lawyers in Gardner Leader. So we've just got a much bigger team, able to deal with more variety of transactions than I previously had the capacity to do. So that's brilliant. Really enjoying being part of the team here. And so as to my business, 50%, I'd say I'm acting for sellers of businesses. That's what I do 50% of the time. The rest of the time I'll be doing any other sort of corporate transaction, like restructuring, shareholder agreements, articles of association, all the usual things that you do. Plus, I also do commercial contracts, and I've been doing that for 30 years as well. But I particularly like to do IT contracts. I've got a lot of experience in tech and IT. So life science is quite a big part of my practice just because of being in Oxford. That's been, you know, a key part of the work.
Amazing. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Sally, I'm going to stay with you for one of the three hardest questions this morning, because you're all experts within your sector, but picking a song on the radio is always somewhat challenging, isn't it? Yes. So you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
It's called Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, because it always cheers me up, and it's particularly apt at this time of year when we're desperately hoping that the sun is coming soon. And I think I'm a natural optimist, so I think it suits my personality in that sense.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that very fitting song chosen by Sally, we've heard from our three experts, so Stephanie, Zach and Sally, almost to set up their businesses to you, the listener. So let's start by start with the topic. So Stephanie, I guess focusing on the individual, what should you be considering when thinking about your exit from work or from owning a business and thinking about maybe getting ready for retirement?
Yeah, so sadly, it's one of the biggest disadvantages of owning your own business, because obviously if you're an employee, your company will contribute your whole of your career into a pension. So you are at a disadvantage owning your business if this has not been a consideration for you. And that can be a significant sum. So the key to any planning is to start as early as you possibly can. As soon as you start your business, really, you should start considering paying into a pension. And there are so many tax advantages for paying into a pension, but it doesn't have to be when you're 25. I do deal with self-employed individuals who just start at 50, because actually they might work till they're 70. So they may have 20 years worth of pension contributions that they can achieve. So it's never, ever too late to start paying into a pension.
Amazing. Zach, one of the things you said in your intro, which I thought was really, really fitting, is that often people that you talk to try to almost do it too late. And actually, really, you might need to start 3 or 4 years out. Build on that point a little bit more. And at what point is too early to plan ready for an exit?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good questions. I mean, to start off with, we know that only 20% of businesses will ever go to market to sell. And of those, actually 80% will not sell for various Wow. reasons, largely because they haven't been prepared for sale. The seller doesn't understand the value of their company. And this fits in very nicely with Stephanie, because you know, you've got to look at all of your assets, including the value of the business, to be able to understand when you should actually exit. But the short of it is that really, when I'm valuing a company, I have to look at the at least minimum the 3 previous years' performance of the business as an indicator of what the value of it is. So if that hasn't been taken into account and we've just gone to market, it does, you know, the result that we get will not be as good as it could be. And we also know statistically that about 75% of business owners that have sold their business a year later, they do regret the amount that they managed to achieve for the sale of the business. So it is quite a big issue.
No, absolutely. And Sally, without, I guess, stating the obvious, I think one of the things that we've learned on this show is that we're all experts within our field, but not necessarily know other parts. So what is the process of selling a business? So so Zach goes and gets a great offer for somebody they accept. What happens from there to the point where cash is in the bank?
OK, well, I can certainly tell you that. But can I just pick up on what Zach was saying first and just say it's also incredibly important from a legal perspective that you prepare for selling. There are so many things that you need to do in order to prepare for sale. And I can go into more detail if you want me to. But I would suggest that people start thinking at least a year ahead. And to get their legal position as good as it can be, and be ready to sell when the time comes. We live by the Benjamin Franklin motto, which is fail to prepare, prepare to fail, because, you know, if you actually want the sale to succeed, you've really got to be ready, you've got to be organized, you've got to be on the front foot, you've got to know what you're doing. You can't just go into a transaction and hope that everything will be okay. It would be a bit like putting your house on the market without having tidied up or got a professional cleaner in, or, you know, just open the front door. So yes, I would definitely agree with Zach that you've got to spend time getting ready to prepare. And I can spend some time talking about what that involves. But in terms of the actual process, so once you've spent the time getting ready and you are ready, and then you've perhaps found a buyer, or you've got a heads of terms and you've perhaps got three or four buyers, which is really the ideal situation, you then would enter into the due diligence process, which is where the buyer has a good old look at your business. So has a good look at your financial records, as Zach was saying, you know, at least 3 years of accounts, and has a good look at all the other issues that you might have identified in your pre-sale planning, and just generally gets a good idea of what your business is like. And that process will involve the buyer sending a questionnaire to the seller's lawyers, us working with the seller to answer that questionnaire, put all the relevant documents in a data room, you know, so all the accounts, material contracts, etc., title to land, etc., whatever it is that the business is selling. The buyer then has a good look at that. And during that process, the buyer will also be producing the first draft of the share purchase agreement. But there may also be some negotiation on price during that period if the buyer discovers issues in the data room, or you know, the seller isn't really properly prepared. Then the share purchase agreement is negotiated, which involves, you know, several drafts usually. And then the completion takes place, money passes hands, any earnout is dealt with. So some, you know, it's quite often there's either deferred consideration or the seller will have to work in the new business for a period of time. And then all the ancillary documents and everything are filed, share registers updated, etc. So yeah, it's quite a big old process.
No, absolutely. and something that Zach said earlier, Stephanie, that I'm keen to build on with you is just around those kind of percentages, that the fact that 80% of businesses don't get to market, and then of the 20% that do, a huge percentage don't actually get sold, and then 75% of business owners may regret the value. Is that quite a common trait in terms of getting to a certain point in your life and maybe not having enough money, or your plan was to exit your business and then you're unable to sell your business? Do you see that quite regularly?
Yeah, I do. And it's environmental conditions. So what's going on in the economy is a huge thing. We saw loads of people exiting employment in COVID for them to then suddenly realize that wasn't the right decision for them, both economically and mentally, because working is good for the soul. So they've come back into the workplace. I think with each client that I deal with, we do a lot of cash flow forecasting, because everybody is very different. When you want to retire is very different to somebody else. You've also got phased retirement as well, which is certainly a new concept, where people maybe go for an employment where it's less stressful. So they might sell their business and still decide to work. But yeah, cash flow modelling is really, really important, because the question I often get from everybody is, how much money do I need? Well, that's a really tricky question to answer without a very detailed conversation, because it's about looking at your expectations in retirement. know, how many times do you want to change your car? How many times do you want to go on holiday? When do you want to retire? So there's loads and loads of questions, and it's an ongoing process. We have to factor in things, sadly, like what are you going to receive from inheritances? So it's looking at the whole picture, you know, whether you sell your business, whether you partially sell your business, and what other factors are going to take place. But nothing's certain. Sadly, COVID has certainly shown us that. But yeah, it's about an ongoing process and making sure that you're having an open and frank discussions with the professionals who can help you.
Amazing. No, really good advice. Stephanie, as with Sally, and Zach looks forward to this later in the show. It's your turn for a tough question now. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Afraid to Feel, LF System. It's not a one maybe known by lots of people, but it's a happy dance tune. Love it for a Sunday morning just to get me up and jumping. And yeah, it's a good, happy, feel-good song.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I hope you've all enjoyed dancing around the kitchen and listening to that great song chosen by Stephanie. Today, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by Zach, Stephanie and Sally, who have kindly spent some time to join us to really consider exiting your business, whether that be selling or whether that be pensions or whether that be something else. And Zach, I'm just keen to come across to you, if that's OK, because I think that a big phrase that we hear is, I think we always think that our house is worth more than we think it is, or our business is worth more than we think it is based on this conversation. Is that a common thing that you see? And I guess, how do you value a business? And I appreciate that's going to be a very difficult question to outright answer, but what are the things to kind of consider when valuing a business?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I've found that business owners generally have an inflated opinion of their business. And certainly part of the problem of doing a deal, and I'm sure your guests will say the same thing, is that there's a very, very big difference between the aspirations of a seller and how an acquirer sees your business. So part of educating my clients is to get them to understand their business from the perspective of a buyer. And you know, that there are key drivers of value. For example, the obvious one, financial performance, what the growth potential is of the business, how involved the owner is in the business, what's unique about the company. One other factor which is quite key in certain industry is recurring revenue. So there are lots of different factors, which is why we have on our website, we have something called a sellability score, which takes 13 minutes for owners to have a look at. And it's a questionnaire which is designed to get them to understand how their business performs in terms of sellability, so that we can understand the strengths and the weaknesses of the business.
No, really, really interesting. And then, Sally, just building on that point that Zach kindly brought out in terms of the buyer and the seller scenario, how often do you see that becoming a problem? And is there anything you can do at an early stage to almost prevent that problem? E.g., at what point should you go to a lawyer in terms of what questions should you ask each other before, I guess, kind of getting to that heads of terms point?
Well, I mean, as I was saying earlier, ideally the seller will be preparing to sell the business early on, and we'll speak to their advisors early on. And often this happens when they're thinking about selling, before they've actually found an actual buyer. They may have had conversations with two or three people who've you know, appeared to be interested. Or they may be speaking to Zach or someone like Zach about getting a buyer. And ideally, they'll talk to their lawyers then to start, as I said, preparing for the sale so that they can get everything ready. But at the latest, as soon as you've got a draft heads of terms, you should, at the latest, speak to your lawyer then. So you should never be signing a heads of terms or any sort of preliminary document without speaking to your lawyer, because you may find that you agree to something that you completely don't understand you've agreed to. If you don't, you could get yourself in quite a difficult situation, because there are quite a lot of preliminary documents that you might sign, like heads of terms, which are not supposed to be legally binding. They're supposed to be just a sort of commercial, it's supposed to just set out the commercial terms that the parties have agreed. But you, if you're not careful, you might actually enter into a legally binding contract that you don't understand. So that's not a good place to be.
What's your take on this, Zach?
One thing I wanted to add is that certainly with my clients, when they're serious about getting to the stage where they want to sell, I think a formal valuation of the company is very important. Mm. And when I undertake these, as Sally says, a certain amount of due diligence is done, which helps progress the deal later on, because preparation is everything. So I think a really good starting point is to understand realistically what your company's worth. And that would be part of the decision-making process as to whether you wanted to proceed now or whether you wanted to grow the business some more so that it could perhaps be more interesting for you to sell it at that stage.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie, is it worth at this point having a conversation with someone like yourself in terms of what would that money do? Because I think that we all go back to kind of childhood, or maybe that it was just me in the playground, and say, I want to be a millionaire when I grow up. But actually, in recent life, actually, probably earning a million probably wouldn't give a lot of people the standard of life that they may think. It might be better, it might be worse, mightn't it? It's quite difficult to predict what a lump of cash would do. Is it worth almost scoping out that, you know, if the business were to be sold for X, what could you do with that money, and what realistically would it give you for what period of time? Is that an exercise that's doable, and is it worth doing it if it is a doable exercise?
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth doing it. Obviously, you can put a certain amount each year into a pension, but what lots of people don't realise is there's something called carry forward, which is a facility where you can backdate unused pension allowances. So you can do that an additional 3 years in addition to the current year as well. And certainly that would boost your pension pot significantly. And there's lots of tax advantages as well to putting your money into a pension. So yeah, it would probably be my first port of call. There would be maybe questions about what their plans were really for the money. Are they going to maybe look at investing in another company? So there would be lots of other questions around that, but certainly putting some money into their pension would be great. £1 million pension pot would be fabulous, Ben. I think most of us would be very happy with that. The lifetime allowance is gone currently. Which means that you can put much more into your pension than you could previously without being taxed. So that's certainly I've had lots of conversations with people about putting additional money into their pension because they couldn't, or it certainly wasn't worth it. So that's opened lots of conversations to additional contributions. But yeah, it's a question. And it's sort of a bigger question because there are lots of other ways of saving tax. But it's finding out exactly what they're going to do with that money moving forward.
No, absolutely. I am going to, because I appreciate, I don't want any of you, me putting you on the spot with a dangerous tax question. So I'm going to say it myself and get myself in trouble here on the radio. one of the things to look at is entrepreneurs tax relief. Absolutely. I'm not a financial advisor, nor am I giving financial advice, but it can make a big difference. So to go and do your own research on entrepreneurs tax relief, unless anyone does want to jump in and say, Ben, you're being very silly. There we go. Sally, well volunteered.
I'm not saying you're being very silly, Ben. It's called business asset disposal relief now.
So oh, there we go.
You look that up.
There we go. Go and research that, because it can make a really, really good difference, yeah, in terms of actually what money does go into the bank. Zach, I'm going to come across to you if that's okay, and really build around this business readiness, because I think that the three of you have said a lot about kind of getting your ducks in a row and about making sure that you plan early and do that due diligence and really kind of make your business sellable. But what can you do early, and what is good business to make your business really attractive to a buyer? Like, what would be your recommendations if somebody is listening now and they're thinking about, you know what, I might want to exit my business in 10 years? That's very early planning. But what are there things they can do now that really does make their business attractive in the future?
Of course. I think, as I alluded to earlier, there are kind of 8 key values, of drivers of value. And coming to somebody like myself, we can assess the business along those lines and see where the strengths and weaknesses lie. And if we're looking at a 10-year strategy, then, I mean, obviously, we can lay a good foundation and understand where we are now. Also, I think what's very important is that early on, try and identify potentially who could be an interesting acquirer, or who is it that could pay me maximum value for my business, and start to align the business towards that type of acquirer. So, I mean, I always say to business owners that any business decision you make could actually be adding or reducing the value of your company. So you should really have a mindset of always looking to be selling and trying to understand the decisions that you're making. Are they adding value to your business, or are they making it harder to sell it?
No, absolutely. Zach, I am going to stay with you now for one of the third of the three hardest questions, which is the song choice. So you've also kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice, and why have you picked
it? Okay, well, I'm a great Bob Marley fan. So for me, Three Little Birds, because it's just fun, it's light, and for me, it's quite energetic. So that's my choice.
The Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Gosh, we've got some good music taste today, haven't we, across our three guests. So if you are just tuning in, other than good music, we're talking about exiting your business, things to consider, whether it be sale or whether a pension be your exit strategy. Stephanie, I'm just going to come across this point, if that's okay. And I think so many people that I've met through this show and through networking and recruitment, they have one exit strategy, and it's, okay, well, I work for a corporate and I'm going to have a pension, or my business is going to be worth this much and I'm going to sell it, or I've got a great aunt Edith who has got a big house and hopefully I'll get some retirement, some inheritance. Should you have one strategy? Is that safe to have one strategy? Or actually, should we be having multiple plan A, B, C, D, E? Because as we rightly said earlier, you know, COVID could happen again and nobody predicted that.
Definitely. I do not think it's a good idea just to have one plan. It's really important to diversify. Some people use property as a strategy for retirement. That can be equally as good. It's quite cumbersome. It's quite difficult to sell property. It's not very quick. But lots of people use that as a retirement option. Downsizing their current property, that's a great way of releasing capital, because you don't have to pay any tax on your home if it is your home that you're selling. But no, diversification is really, really important, because it might not be the right time to take money out of the stock market. 2022 was a very, very challenging year for the markets. And ideally, if you could leave your money in there, it was a better thing to do. But obviously, not everyone can do that. They can't afford that. So it's really, really important to have money in cash as a sort of a backup. We always recommend having an emergency fund and a contingency fund. So sort of creating a strategy for your cash is really, really important. But it's great to have various different pots in different investments so that you so that you're not reliant on one? Because, yeah, again, I spoke about property, but property in the past has reduced in value. It hasn't done so for quite a long time, but we're very used to it increasing at the moment. But, it can reduce. So, it's so important to have sort of your fingers in lots of pies, because diversification really reduces the risk.
Absolutely. Sally, I'm going to ask you a very specific question, if that's okay. And I hope you don't mind. I think one of the things that Zach touched on earlier was that 75% of people who sell their business may regret it a year later. And I think that I've seen it quite a lot in the recruitment game, in terms of a business has been sold or somebody has exited and then set up a year later in competition. What can you realistically do to protect yourself from selling a business, or I guess either side, whether you're selling the business, protect yourself from regretting doing that, but if you're buying a business, protect yourself from the previous owner having a change of heart and wanting back in, I guess.
Sure. So from the seller's perspective, I'll touch on both, but from the seller's perspective, for example, if part of your sale is client contracts or something associated with clients, you can carve out of any restrictive covenant that if they are your client, that the restrictive covenant won't apply to them. So it's quite common in a sale agreement for the seller or the directors of the seller to agree not to compete or not to solicit customers, clients, etc., for a period of time, usually 1 year or 2 years, sometimes shorter. So, if you regret the decision to sell, you may find yourself in trouble because you've accepted those restricted covenants. So if you can carve out of those that any clients that you have brought over, for example, that you can go back to them if you want to, that's great, but it's not always possible to do that, obviously, but that's one of the things you can do. And then from the buyer's perspective, it's fairly easy to tie in the seller if you want to stop them going off and competing for a period of time, by either making the consideration, some of it deferred, so you don't pay it all up front. You might pay it some after 6 months, a year, 18 months, whatever. Or you have what's called an earnout, where the selling shareholders or directors are incentivized to work for the new business. So they get a share of the profits if they meet certain targets, or they might get the equivalent of the value, for their shares again, but in the future, if they meet certain targets. And that an earnout and deferred consideration are very common. I'd see them in 80-90% of deals. That's the way the buyer protects themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Zach, what's your take on this in terms of, I guess, creating a good deal? And I appreciate there probably isn't a one size fits all. Of course there isn't, but I like anything, somebody buying something wants to get the best deal, and somebody selling something wants to get the best deal. So what are things to, I guess, to be considered in order to get that best deal, in inverted commas?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, I think transparency in a deal is very important. I think that if a client's prepared and ready to sell, they've dealt with any difficult issues, they've come to myself or somebody like Sally to make sure that they're ready to go to market. And I think transparency and honesty and creating the right environment for a deal are very, very important. So I think that's the first thing. And secondly, very, very early on, being able to understand the maximum type of buyer, the buyer that's going to be the most attracted to what you have to offer. I think these are very, very key things. And as Sally's alluded, often buyer and seller have to work together for a period of time post-sale. So they have to be able to get on. They have to They have to align. So it's very, very important to create the right atmosphere for the right deal.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, really, really interesting. We are coming towards the final stint of the show. And I feel really bad saying this to the three of you because you've been given tips the whole show. But I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. One of the things we do like to do on the show is to share top tips. So I guess if we go wrap around the circle and ask each of you, if you had to give one tip, whether it be something we've discussed today or whether it's something that hasn't yet been discussed around exiting or selling or retiring, what would be your top tips? And I'm going to start with you, Stephanie, if that's okay.
Easy for me. It's paying money into your pension. It's so tax efficient. If you like paying tax, great. If you don't and you want to reduce your tax burden, you can make a substantial saving by just putting some money into a pension. And it doesn't need to be 60,000, which is what you can put in currently in this tax year. It can be as small as you want, but it will make a big difference to you personally, but also to the business in reducing it corporation tax. So that would be my one top tip.
Amazing, and a great tip too. Sally, what would be your tip?
So prepare, identify the issues that you've got in your business. You know your business, you know what are the little wrinkles that any buyer, you know, might be put off by. Think about them, identify them, work out how to either solve them or at least make them look more attractive. And the other thing is, so that's kind of in the immediate run-up to a sale, you know, maybe a year or 6 months before. But even longer than that, while you're running the business, always try and think about, well, if I do that, how will the buyer in 5 years' time react to that? So if I give my employees some shares or a share option scheme, it's great for now, but how will a buyer look at that in the future? So always just try and have a bit of forward thinking.
Amazing. And last but not least, Zach.
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit, first of all, because I'm going to repeat what Sally says. If you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. And I think that if I could shout on the rooftops, that would what it would be. And my advice really is, again, similar to Sally's, which is perspective. Every business owner should try and get a perspective of their business from the position of an acquirer and start thinking about it from the other side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great advice. And thank you so much. And what a way to end the show. But we have unfortunately run out of time. So thank you so much to the three of you for spending your time and offering such practical advice. I think to anybody in the world of business listening, in fact, anyone in the world listening, it's been some really, really good things to consider. So I hope you've all had your notepads at home. If you are just tuning in, we've had Stephanie Richards, we've had Zach Doga, and we've also had Sally Addis. So thank you so much to the three of you again for your time and contribution to discussion. We are back next week with three brand new guests, and we're going to be providing an update on property in Oxfordshire. And to do so, we're joined by Mark Kavanagh of MK Mortgages, Gavin West of West the Property Consultancy, and Greg Barnes of Brecon & Brecon. Just finally, a reminder, you can listen to this show every Sunday on the radio and online at 11 a.m. You can also listen to the podcast format, which is available on all your favourite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see my lovely guests, which is available on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing across Oxfordshire this Sunday, enjoy your Sunday and enjoy the next week ahead. Thank you so much.